Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are truly making a difference in this world. And we're going to explore many different and important aspects and areas of life, including business, physical, mental, relationships, disabilities, many more interesting topics. So far, our broadcast team consists of Michael Collins out of New York. He's the author of Ushering in the Golden Age and a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. Taylor Tagg out of Tennessee, author of Enrich Your Sunrise, also a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. Ray Stendahl. Ray spoke with me at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia in March. He's a certified instructor. Dave Yablecki out of British Columbia, Canada. He provides entertainments for casinos, colleges, universities, and trade shows. And my friend Tracy Montgomery out of Calgary, Alberta. She's an author of ebooks on dating and relationships that had generated close to 20,000 downloads. My name is Tom Tutall Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter, and I spoke at the 2012 Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now, and I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced. And I've been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1". That's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. Despite all those things, I'm well known for always answering amazing when asked how I'm doing. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal. That's a digital-only publication, which is the official and only media partner of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. And you can find more about me on my website. It's tom2talltall.com. I'm really excited today to have as my guest Jack Black from the UK. Still today, I tell people is my most exciting interview ever when I interviewed him for Phil Taylor's Goal Achievers Blog Talk Radio. And I've referred to Jack Black when I talk about him as the Tony Robbins of the UK. He's the founder and course director of Mindstore International. And back in the 1980s, he was a social worker in the underprivileged East End of Glasgow, Scotland. After seeing 2 colleagues destroy their health through the stress of work while only in their 40s, and then experiencing a similar collapse himself, he decided to discover how stress could be managed and personal development harnessed to allow people to fulfill their potential. Mindstore was the culmination of his findings, and now Jack is recognized as one of the UK's leading authorities on personal development and is an internationally renowned keynote speaker. Mindstore has evolved over 20 years of research and development and underpins a range of unique tools designed to empower anyone to achieve much more in their personal and business lives. Mindstore uniquely provides participants with mental tools to harness whole brain thinking, boosting their self-belief, their creativity, and their confidence so that they can succeed and enjoy life to the full. Mindstore has offices in the UK and France, Switzerland, Germany, and Australia. And Jack has taught this Mindstore to over 500,000 people, including business leaders and top entrepreneurs. Over half of the FTSE 100, which I gather is the equivalent of the Fortune 100 in North America, those companies are clients. He also has world champions, sports teams, entertainers, and endless leaders and teams from blue chip companies around the world that have benefited from his teachings. He has appeared on numerous television and radio programs and is regularly featured in magazines and national newspapers. Jack continues to work with international leaders in the field of performance coaching, creating leading edge approaches to organizational and personal development. And he continues to be busy presenting on the international conference circuit. Jack is married, lives and works in the UK, and travels extensively to share the Mindstore system around the world. He's also an author. His best-selling books are Mind Store, The Ultimate Mental Fitness Program, and Mind Store for Personal Development. Welcome to the show today, Jack.
Hi, Tom. It's lovely to hear your voice again. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's pretty exciting. I really have listened to a lot of your audios, and I would say, besides Zig Ziglar, who is my all-time favorite, you've moved up into second place because your overall philosophy is really, really geared to how I think and how I believe as well. So I'm really excited to have you on the show. And Jack, of the audios I listen to, which goes along with the first question and the only question I usually script, I've heard you describe the book Think and Grow Rich, and of course you described it more on the Andrew Carnegie side, being Scottish and all, but tell me about the first time you read Think and Grow Rich, and also perhaps who recommended it to you, because those can be pretty important people in our lives.
Yeah, Tom, the book, I think, to be honest, it's probably the greatest book that was ever written, apart from probably the big book. But, you know, the truth of the matter is that I think if anyone's really honest with themselves and you look at the plethora of personal development, you know, books and programs around the world, if you actually look at those and you follow the roots through the person that wrote it, what influenced them and who influenced them and what book they read and who influenced the writer there, you follow it all the way through. I think the DNA comes back to Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. I think that the impact of the book is probably impossible to measure. And I was introduced to it by my father when I was a young man. Very, very early on, my dad was a keen believer in, you know, that kind of writing. And it just took me right away by storm, and you know, they almost immediately started to practice the principles there. But I've always recommended it to every audience I've ever talked to, and in fact I build into some of my programs some ideas around stuff that he alluded to in the books, particularly his relationship in the interview with Andrew Carnegie. And you're right, you know, being a Scotsman, I'm fascinated by Carnegie, but particularly Carnegie being the richest man that ever lived,
yes,
who resolved to give it all away. And as you know, most of the really, really wealthy entrepreneurs in the world who understand what it's really all about follow his lead now.
Which is exciting, isn't it, that a lot of these wealthy people have now, they publicly, probably before they gave without big fanfare, but now people are really, truly, like Carnegie, developing that fortune, but then developing a cause and a purpose to spend that money on. And not only do you recommend Think and Grow Rich, you passionately recommend Think and Grow Rich, because you really tell a good story, and people, I don't think how they could not read Think and Grow Rich after you described it. And so I love that. I even sent it to Don Green, the executive director of the Napoleon Hill Foundation. I made a little note. I've never heard anyone passionately recommend Think and Grow Rich more than Jack Black. So congratulations on that. Jack, when I was listening to your audios as well, one of them that was most exciting, and you sounded most excited, was the work that you did with kids. And one was you were teaching a little course before they were to take some big countrywide, maybe it sounded like exams, and the results they got on those exams were incredible. Can you tell me a little bit about that course and how you were able to help those kids?
Well, this is a big, exciting part of the work we've been doing. Again, more recently, I got involved with a number of education authorities now, and increasingly getting involved because of the results that came out of that experience. What actually happened was that an entrepreneur, a restaurateur in Glasgow, who is a good friend of mine, who did my training courses many years ago, and you know, and claimed that his success came from doing the programs and using the techniques. I had lunch with him. This was a few years back, a couple of years ago now, and he'd gone to speak at a local school, secondary school. So that would be, 15-year-olds to 18-year-olds. So he was there to give a speech about entrepreneurship, and he found that the young people there had a real poverty of aspiration, and it really shocked him. And he was telling me all about it, and then we got talking. Before I knew where we were, he was saying, would I come and do something for them? And I could hardly say no. But what happened there, he got a much bigger vision, and what he did was he approached other entrepreneurs who would come through his restaurants, and what they did was they agreed to put some money together. I gave my time freely, obviously, but what they did was they went to the local, the Glasgow authority, the education authority, and arranged to bus into the city centre, into one of the auditoriums, as many of the young people as they could. And we got 2,500 people into one of the big venues in Glasgow, and I spent a day with them. And it was round about the autumn, so it was, and it was to see whether or not, first of all, this was 15 to 18-year-olds, whether or not I could relate to them, because it's a long time since I've talked to that age group. I didn't even know if they would, because some of these young people were demotivated, you know, they weren't necessarily not totally committed to their education, but nevertheless they managed to get them in there. And I didn't know if they would sit and listen for a day, but in fact they did, and by the end of the day they were kind of cheering and got really excited. And I said to them, well, look, if you guys would agree to sit your exams, I'll come back in the March, just ahead of the national examinations, and do a day on how to sit exams using our techniques. You know, would you come? And there was a huge cheer and so on. So what happened was that come the March, true enough, we took another venue out, the Glasgow Royal Concert Hall, and we got 2,000 of them in. Again,
wow.
Bussed in and supported by the entrepreneurs. The Education Authority couldn't afford to spend any money on it. And
yeah,
we brought them in, and I took them through a day of I've got particular processes around sitting exams, and the audience was just amazing. Young people, 15 up to 18-year-olds. And when the exams came through, the results came through, the city got the best results in its history.
Wow.
In the national exams. But I can't particularly claim anything, because you can't measure that. But what was very, very interesting was that by the time Christmas came, just there in 2011, last year, I was doing another event for young people in another authority, Lanarkshire in Scotland. And I was off preparing young people who were 18-year-olds about to do presentations to you know, hundreds of judges around businesses they were developing. And I met one of the teachers who was at the previous event. She had now moved to this new authority. And what she said to me was that she had brought along the worst ever, what they call fourth year, that the school she worked in had ever had in the history of the school. They came along with her. She agreed to support them with the techniques I taught that day for the exam. There was still a month to go before the exam season, and she said that when the exam results came back, we had the best ever fifth year in the history of the school.
Holy smokes!
So this feedback was extraordinary, and since then, you know, I've experimented with it in different situations. The funny thing is, I find that young people who possibly are demotivated and don't have any expectation of doing well at school in terms of their national exams or whether they should even sit them, are the ones who become most motivated by it. I had the privilege of sharing the tools and techniques with a very wealthy private school, and found that the motivation to use the techniques was far more limited, because their expectation was they don't need techniques anyway. But then historically, they've always got the best results in the country.
Right.
So it's interesting that those who are already highly motivated and have all the support felt they didn't need tools and techniques. The feedback was roughly 40% of those young people were motivated to use them. Whereas when I work with the underprivileged and the kids who don't have any sense of you know, a future, they, once they get these techniques, they're wide open to learning. First of all, they realise someone who cares about them is giving them something of value. Then what I find was their motivation massively increases, and the feedback's more like 80% of them are moved to use the technique, which is fascinating.
It is fascinating. I'm wondering why. I'm thinking of a book I read recently called Mindset by Carol Dweck, where she talks about people with a growth mindset or a fixed mindset. And often, as you talked about the wealthy school, you know, those kind of people often may think that they have the skills and the talents, they're born with it. They do, you know, this is my parents are so great and so I have it.
Yep.
And so they don't believe they need those tools and techniques, whereas maybe people in that part, lower part that wouldn't even sit, they know they need to grow their, you know, they don't have all the answers and they don't have the skills and abilities. But what a feeling that must generate, more than any money you could ever earn.
Absolutely.
Because if you change one of those kids, you could change their future kids, you could change their brothers and sisters, you could change even their parents thinking about them. Wow.
Well, Tom, you know, one of the other things, given what you said there, I think one of the real reasons why those kids in the privileged school weren't as motivated is to do with the fact that they're well through their education, and the emphasis in the education, especially in that school, was on what I would call left-brain subjects.
Mm.
It was the academic subjects. So in terms of left and right brain, their development is very, very tailored, in fact, focused on left brain. So they're more likely to be more reasoning and logical in their thinking, and certainly would be very, very skeptical by the age of, you know, this was 17-year-olds I was working with, very skeptical about the right brain stuff.
Right.
There's a more freeing, daydreamy type of mindset of the ones who have been previously doing well with academics, more able to listen to and enjoy the more right brain training that I give people anyway. So it's interesting.
Wow.
It's either about the sense of just the expectation that these privileged youngsters would do well anyway, but it could also be their inability to open up because they're already so focused on left brain rather than being able to accept the right brain.
Wow, I like that. And that is, in MindStore, is a lot of the focus of your work. And one of our mutual friends, Joe Connolly, one of the greatest storytellers I've ever met, he spoke, when he speaks about you, he talks about this whole brain thinking, because you and I, men, businessmen, we tend to be a lot, 90% into our left brain. But when you release the whole brain to thinking, this is where your creativity comes from, where your new ideas come from, all kinds of things come from this whole brain thinking. But how do you get a old fart like myself, who's used to 90% to left brain thinking all these years, how do you help transfer people to whole brain thinking when they're used to being all their life left brain thinkers?
Well, this is the big thing I spent the last 20 odd years of my life doing. It's encouraging people to realize that they have a right brain, and this emphasis on the left brain primarily because of the education system and its emphasis on left brain subjects. So what in the academics? So what I find is that once I explain that, then we take them through a learning curve. And what I do is people listening to this will know that they actually access their right brain when they're nice and relaxed. You know, this time of the year they may have been off on an annual holiday or something, and they're maybe go to a beach somewhere, and they're lying on the beach or by a poolside, and they're kind of sunbathing. Before they know where they are, they start to daydream, they start to fantasize. So that daydreaming and fantasizing that's coming in that nice, relaxed place in the sunshine is actually the right brain kicking in. It's the imagination taking over. And so if with structure and training, someone would be able to at any time, not just when they're on holiday, but any time with control, access that same level of mind, then they would have access to the right brain. So what I do is I teach people how to do that, but how I get them to structure the right brain is I get them to imagine that they're standing on the bank of a river. And what I do is I explain to them that the river relates to the corpus callosum, which is the sort of the fibrous part between the two hemispheres, and the neocortex. And what I get them to do is to imagine the river's behind them and to imagine they're looking into a landscape. And this landscape is something they've got to actually make up in their mind. They've got to use imagination. And then what I get them to do is I help them do it by suggesting they're standing in green grass, there's blue sky, starting to create the landscape. And what I'm getting to do is I'm going to use metaphor to represent the right brain, but by actually having to use the right brain to develop it, it has a lot of power. And then what I get them to do is, if you can imagine, is in this deeply relaxed, stress-busting state, they walk in their imagination into this landscape. And inside the right brain, on this landscape, I get them to build a house. And the house takes 2 days to build, a windy or 3 days, depending on what we're doing with the client. And in that building, in that house, there are lots and lots of rooms. And in each of the rooms, there are specific tools and techniques that they can use that impact various aspects of life. And that's really how I get people to do it, and that's why we've been so successful, because it works.
Wow, and I've actually purchased that audio, and I've been on that riverbank numerous times, and you can almost, I can feel like my shoulders get looser, I feel my head starts to feel like it's got helium in it, it's so light, and once you start, and once you learn to go along that riverbank, and you enjoy those beautiful sights and sounds, and you get to the house equipped with all your amazing rooms where you can transform your thinking and your thoughts and your ideas. What a tremendous journey that is into your imagination, but also your body relaxes and your brain just starts firing off all kinds of ideas and thoughts. And so very difficult for a lot of us left-brain thinkers to take 20 to 30 minutes a day to go into our riverbank and into our thinking and examine all these things. But boy, when you do, I think it's probably, to me, it feels like exercising, like I have more energy afterwards,
yes,
like my brain is clear, like I'm walking a bit taller. And so, boy, I highly recommend it, however you can fit it in, beginning of the day, over a lunch hour, but take some time every day to, as you say, kind of you go into a trance and you picture all these beautiful things, and the rooms you speak about have, as you said, great purposes in each room, and you can examine different ones every day, and boy, it really, really will help you with so many aspects of your life and just open up. Like, it's like opening up another half of your brain. It's pretty cool.
Cheers, Tom. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Now, one of the things, Jack, I get asked a lot about, especially as a Napoleon Hill instructor, and I sometimes get frustrated with not being able to help some people, is definite purpose. People that have a definite purpose and they know what their purpose is, like myself, sometimes we are perplexed by people who really can't find out what their purpose is, what their skill is, what their talent is, and yet it's, in Napoleon Hill's writing, the most important success principle. If you know where you're going, you could drop a lot of things off your to-do list every day. You could focus more on some things, focus less on others, and get through really tough times when you know where you're going. What about yourself? And even some people have asked me, what about definite purpose? Can it change over the years? What's your experience been with it? Did you find your purpose right away when you started Mind Store, or when you were thinking of this, and has it changed over the years? And how could people find it?
Yeah, this is a big part of our approach, what we encourage people to do. My belief is that unless someone is already aware of it, then they have to go through a kind of a process. And what we do is, in the middle of our programs, we encourage people to set goals. And obviously, because of a right brain approach, we get them to set goals in the right brain, not the left brain. And what tends to happen is that by taking them through a particular process, they get into a flow of consciousness, Tom, where what happens is ideas come to the surface of things that we'd like to have, do, or be.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find is that if they really, really trust the process, and I've got them into the right place in the program, they get into this situation where they start to really, really imagine what might be possible, and the right brain kicks in, so it takes it much further. If I can just do a little aside for a moment, if people set the goals with their left brain, which most people do, that's logical, reason, analytical type, what they tend to do is they base their future, what they begin to think might be possible, they base that on their present experience and their past results. And then they read a left brain textbook about goal setting that says your goals should be realistic and achievable. And
yes,
immediately they think that way, it closes down their creativity. When you think about, and I ask audiences all the time, who do you admire and why? And all around the world, you get the same names, the global giants historically and present day. And, Nelson Mandela always comes up, no matter where I am in the world. Now, you look at Nelson Mandela, his goal when he was in prison for 20-odd years, 27 years in South Africa, his goal was completely and utterly impossible. It wasn't at all realistic or achievable. And what you begin to find is that when we look at the men and women who have inspired us, they set the goals in their right brain, not their left brain. And what I do is I get people to enter this place where they start, stuff comes from deeper inside them, comes to the surface, and they write them down. And then I take them through a process to narrow these goals down, so they end up with roughly about 7. And my experience is that once they start using our techniques to program these 7 goals into their subconscious and gradually take action as a result of that, that out of that process, almost with those 7 goals in there is the purpose in life. But if it's not there, I have this really, really profound belief, to be honest, that if people are coming to this type of approach, I have this belief that because I believe in the notion of a superpower, if you like God, or someone like the universe, or higher intelligence, or whatever they want to talk, whatever they believe in, I respect their belief. But whatever that is for them, then I believe that power would not give somebody at that moment their purpose in life being revealed to them, because at that moment they would probably squander it, because they would not yet have the trust in themselves, the experience of the techniques. Mm. And so what I find happens is that for a lot of people, they go and use the techniques and they start to manifest these apparently impossible goals. And my experience has been that on that journey, when, in other words, by cutting the chains of inertia and building the momentum moving forward and getting used to the idea of goals driving their behavior, then at some point in that journey, when it's ready, when they're ready to receive it, then the purpose is revealed. And then they will not squander it.
Wow.
This is my approach and not what I fundamentally believe in.
And you mentioned something so powerful there that when you find it, my purpose when I eventually found it, when I took the leader, Napoleon Hill leader certification course, I wrote one out, and then the director who knows me well said, Tom, that's not your purpose. That's somebody else's purpose that we both knew. And so then when we dug into it and I have mine now, when I look at it, I know that this is why God created me. This is what my purpose was when he invented me. So do you think any challenges, any frustrations, anything can stop me when I know that God put me here to do this? It may slow me down. It will never get me off the path, because I know this is the specific purpose you were made for. And so hard for people to find that. What about people? There's a lot of people in jobs, and good jobs, maybe even jobs they like, but it's not their definite purpose. Your definite purpose is not always your job, but your job can help you with your definite purpose, maybe help fund your definite purpose, support it somehow. How do people, can you talk a little bit about that, where your job is not always your definite purpose?
Yep.
And sometimes maybe it may never, your job may never be working exactly where your purpose is. You need one to support a family and kids sometimes, but you need to also keep your purpose alive as well.
I had this very conversation yesterday with a very good client of mine in Ireland, who is in a situation where the job that he's currently in, which has been really, really an entrepreneurial leader in, he's coming to a kind of point where he feels he needs to move on, and he's struggling with, do I move back into the corporate world and get locked into what that's all about, or do I go after what he thinks he's here to do?
Mm.
And you see, what often happens again is that, unfortunately, the way that our kind of world operates is the vast majority of people who are introduced to the goal-setting thing and the notion of purpose and why we're here, they very often tend to get stuck into the logical, reasoning, analytical, left-brain goal-setting that suits the corporation. And that has to then obviously be sort of, managed in some way, especially with thousands of employees.
Mm-hmm.
And yet all the time entrepreneurs, they're using the right brain, digging out and doing all sorts of different things. There's very, very often the issue that people get sucked into the notion that actually the purpose is their job, as you said, and then they realise after a while that maybe their job isn't ever going to give them that freedom, and then they face one of the great lessons in life. And I was coaching a guy yesterday indirectly, and we were having a good chat about it, and that is the realisation that actually money isn't everything. And the notion of getting back for him, if he stayed in the corporate land and went back there, yes, he would make lots of money, but he would be getting up every morning and facing, you know, the same issues day in, day out, just, you know, slightly different because it'd be a different industry or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he could see that stretching for another, you know, 20 years, whereas if he put 20 years into what his passion would be, you know, he may not make anything like the same money. He may, but he might not, certainly not initially. But then the level of happiness, the enjoyment in life would go through the roof. So people facing these decisions, and you're so right, if you know that you've got this sense that, well, I was made this way, this is what I meant to do, then how on earth could you possibly, to use your word, fail? You know, you would be guided, you would be directed. And this is the great challenge for us, where so many of us are locked into the control of the left logical reasoning brain. It's so, so sad, because I was talking to another person the other day about entrepreneurship, and the truth of the matter is that in order to build fantastic entrepreneurial companies, you need the creative, almost crazy right brain of an entrepreneur, but alongside that entrepreneur, you must make sure very quickly you've got a very, very good financial director. Unless that left brain logical accountant is sitting alongside this creative madman, as it were, madwoman, then you know, the chances are the business will fail. But if you've got the two together, and they can accept that there will constantly be possibly in conflict at times, but out of that squeeze between one another, then they'll move forward. And this is what we need. We're needing to understand that we need the creative, intuitive right brain to work for us. And it's only when that's released, and obviously I pride myself in teaching those techniques, but only when that right brain is made available in the peace and calm that you need to access it, can you hear the inner voice.
Yeah.
And the inner voice then, or the higher, whatever anyone wants to believe in, then it will be revealed. And as I've said already, it will not be revealed until you're able to actually deal with it. Why would it be? Because it'll be squandered, and it's too precious to be squandered.
Exactly. Now, even as you mentioned it a few times, I'm thinking in my head, again, more of a left-brain thinker. Can you give me examples of the difference between a left-brain goal and a right-brain goal? Does a right-brain goal have more words with emotions in it, or more ideas, or what is the difference?
That's a very, very good point. I mean, I on Twitter, I recently started to follow Morgan Freeman, and he said something just yesterday, I think it was, or the day before. He said, "Look, if your dreams don't frighten the life out of you, they're not good enough."
Yes.
You know, and it's interesting, the word dream. You know, all the great leaders, all the great people who broke through in any field, talk about the dream they had. But most recently, we had this in the UK with the Olympics. So many of the people who were winning gold were talking about their dream. They dreamt about it all their life. And dreaming, of course, is a right brain experience. It's not a left brain experience. It happens when your brainwave activity is slowed right down in your sleep pattern, not in the high frequencies when we're wide awake. And so what left brain goals are goals that your logic tells you can achieve because of X, Y, and Z, because of past experience, present resources, you know, what you think's out there that can help you, you know, and you set something that, this is more important, is that you also set a goal that you already can almost figure out how you're going to get there. You can figure out a strategy, you can plan it all, and of course, all the books tell people to do that.
Yeah.
Yet, when we look at the men and women who inspire us historically, they had no plan in the beginning. When they set the goal was truly and utterly impossible, but when they set the goal, when they, in their mind, in their ability to dream, at that level where the brain dreams, when they went into the dream, in the dream state, the dream absolutely inspired them and compelled them. to do whatever you had to do to achieve it. Now, and there's another great truth about it. Anybody who set themselves a realistic, achievable goal isn't going to get out of bed tomorrow morning with a passion to go and achieve it.
Right.
But the men and women who are driven by goals that are so inspiring, listen to this language if you don't mind, Tom, they constantly go back to the future in their mind. They constantly go back to that dream because it's so wonderful. Then they get up in the morning with a passion.
Nice.
More importantly, the people, the places, and the opportunities they actually need to achieve these goals begin to show up as the time moves on. The other great frustration for the left brainers with this approach to goal setting is they've been taught and they've understood, the left brainers, that you should know how you're going to get there. You should have a plan. You should have all the stepping stones in your mind before you start out.
Yeah.
The frustration for them is that in this approach, you have no idea when you begin what you're going to do. You might have some idea, but it's not important. And more importantly, here's the frustration, that every single resource that you need to achieve the goal is actually out there in the world, but it hasn't lined itself up for you yet. And when it's the right time, and when you're able and capable to deal with it, the idea comes, the person you need, the resources are revealed, everything slowly but surely turns up at the right time, in the right place. And when you do achieve the goal, like all of them who have gone before, you hear them say, sooner or later, you know what? I was in the right place at the right time.
Jack, you just described my life to a T. When I first read Law of Success, I got the Canadian rights to it. I sold it door-to-door to businesses. And my definite purpose was to speak about Napoleon Hill success principles. I had no plan. I had no goal. I was 23 years old. There was no internet. I didn't even know the Napoleon Hill Foundation existed. It was founded, I think, 1966, so it was there, but you couldn't find it. I didn't know about it. And so this year in March, when I was on the stage speaking at the Napoleon Hill International Convention, and for 20-some-odd years, that dream was in my head. I could see myself speaking there, but I had no plan whatsoever. And for some years, I thought, boy, I got to get rid of this visualization because it's not going anywhere. And then when it showed up, I looked up a friend I hadn't seen in 15 years. He had just formed the only business partnership the Napoleon Hill Foundation ever has gotten into with a coffee company. And he said, I just created a partnership with the Napoleon Hill Foundation. I almost fell off my chair. Today, his name is in the front of a collector's edition, Think and Grow Rich. They branded it for their company. This is a friend I sold Law of Success with door-to-door. His name's in the front of a Think and Grow Rich Napoleon Hill Foundation book. And I'm speaking at a convention. Just like you said, I had no plan. How could I put a plan? I was 23. I had no idea how it was going to work. And then, as you said, people start showing up and you're like, wow, I met this person. Like, how does this happen? And it's only by having it cemented in my head, where that movie was so real, that my subconscious went out and found the resources and the people and the opportunity. And so, if I had left brain thought that out, I would never have been able to plan that or even think about it. And then another idea, like when you said, like when I wrote my definite purpose, you have to put an income level in there. And so I got a little left brainy and I put a income one, and then I thought, whoa, that's too much. Like, this is what you've earned before. And so I had my little left brain battle, and finally I said, no way. If God created me for this purpose and he gave me this number in my head, he wouldn't just give me this number out of the blue. I put it in there, and it'll get there. I don't know exactly the plan, but I'm taking lots of actions towards it. And so exactly, if it is right brain, you may not have the first four steps to take to get to that purpose, right?
Absolutely.
This
is the way for every single human being. And the thing I say to people is, when they're a little bit skeptical, and I understand the skepticism, is, and I've been doing this for the best part of 25 years, if what I was teaching didn't work, I'd been found out long before now. you know,
yes.
would find out that it wasn't, and I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be able to have done what I've done with this. And the
yes.
other thing I've got is because I've shared this with 500,000 people, you know, I just meet people constantly who come back and say, you know, I sat in your program 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever. I wrote down those goals were absolutely impossible. Yet all these years later, I achieved all of them. I've heard that thousands of times.
And what an amazing feeling when you know what your purpose is and you help people with that. I've felt it even just on a little scale. Boy, you don't need much money to get through a day when you've accomplished your purpose and you're walking on air and you've helped people change their life, possibly change their kids' life, their families' lives for a long time. Like, wow, that is an extremely powerful feeling. Another thing that you really go a lot into and which I really admire is the wheel of life, because we hear of a lot of successful people. They're successful in one area. We may hear about it. It's publicized, wealth or business. But in the end, for real success, your life has to have some kind of a balance, or the world will not see you as an overall success. They'll see you as a one area of life success. But for true admiration and true legacy and true to your purpose, you really need to look after all the areas of your life, don't you?
Absolutely, and this is a great thing. I mean, I often might spend, you know, a lot of my time working inside companies, and you know, you get in front of an audience. You know, I work with all sizes of audiences and companies all around the world, but you get people sitting there, and oh, here we go, we've got to do a course for this guy or 2 days or whatever, and they think it's about selling or they think it's about production or whatever it is I'm there to work with. And the truth of the matter is that when I start with the wheel of life and I take them through a kind of measurement process of the various areas that are critical in their life on a scale of 1 to 10, they very quickly realize, whoa, wait a minute, that this training process is going to help me get all of this back in balance. And then I get the buy-in because they're motivated to want to get the training. And, you know, it's not, you're right, there's so many people who are apparently successful in their business life or in their sporting life, or even in the relationship, but they're not. But the other areas that are important to them aren't doing well at all. And it's making sure that they use the tools and techniques in the key areas and bring balance and work at balance. Now, I kind of talk about a big circle, and there's, you know, there's 12 spokes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a scale of 1 to 10 and measure it from the center to the circumference and see what shape your wheel looks like. And most people's are kind of irregular, obviously. And I always have to say to an audience, like, I've never met the man or woman who scores 10 for every spoke, who's got the perfect circle. It's just impossible because we're human.
Mm-hmm.
But it's well worth realizing where you do have to put the effort and the work in. And again, about goal setting and about using these tools and techniques is, you know, if you set yourself the goal to take 2 years and you've got to watch your left brain doesn't say something's going to take a long time and it could take a lot less if your right brain's allowed to work with it. But nevertheless, if you think about setting a goal over a given period of time, then what happens is that whatever has to come into play will appear there, and the time will go in anyway. You know, if it's a 2 year goal and you put the effort in, the 2 years goes by, and then along the way you achieve the goal or you achieve something even better.
Mm.
The 2 years will go in without a goal. That's the tragedy for everybody. The 2 years goes in without goals for those who don't set goals. And more importantly, the limitation and the frustration of not living the true purpose is another 2 years gone. And this is the sad thing, because for many people, they're not setting goals and they're just hoping, I suspect, that the person that's leading them has got a good goal, a decent goal, and so on. And as I often confront audiences with the fact that there's some research suggests it's probably only 4% of the population that actually sets goals. They've got this kind of 90-odd percent who doesn't.
Mm.
And the 90-odd percent who don't set goals actually spend their entire lives helping the 4% achieve theirs.
Exactly.
That's a pretty frightening idea, you know, that only a handful of people on the planet actually get the chance to follow their true purpose.
Oh, it's sad, because when you are following your purpose, you think everybody should feel like this, like they are knowing and following their purpose. And I feel sad when I find people where I don't have a process like yours to say, okay, here's what you can do to get closer to your purpose. And but the thing I like about the wheel of life, and you have a few more spokes than other people put in. I have like seven areas of life when I list them out. I think Zig does as well. You put a few in that are kind of unique. You talk about, I think, possessions or your home, which when I heard that one, it's like, yeah, I really don't like the home I'm in. I got to move. It's not for me. And so I haven't heard that one on a list before. But when you can look after those, all those areas, let's say you need improving on your physical and your family life, if you can recognize that, you see it on a wheel, you put time into it, when you improve those areas, guess what? Your career improves. You make more money. When you're at work, you're not thinking, oh, I'm tired, I'm sore, I could get sick, I might get cancer, my wife is this, my kids are that. When you're at work, you can focus mentally and physically on your work. When you're in other areas of your life, you can focus on those because the ones that are flat on your wheel are now being worked on, and so every area of your life improves by looking after like one or two areas where you kind of have a flat tire.
Yeah. And the thing is, the thing about the balance, Tom, which is so important, is that unfortunately, if you boil it, if you get away from the notion of the wheel, whether it's 7, 8, 12 spokes, whatever you want, if you boil it down to two simple things, one would be work versus not work. Unfortunately, in our cultures in North America and here in the UK and elsewhere in Northern Europe, by and large, the culture is to work most of the time rather than and not work most of the time.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, people kid themselves on and they don't realize that they're working almost every hour God can send, and it's a huge challenge, and particularly in the cultures that we're from. And there's this expectation that you should do this. But if you're working every hour God sends, then the chances are, if it could be measured in terms of a scale of 1 to 10, most people are probably functioning somewhere around 7. Possibly even 6. And they think that they're flat out, and they think they're doing the best they can. But if, in fact, they change the emphasis to actually the most important thing in my life is not my work, but in fact is my recreation and leisure time and my valued time with my loved ones, and that's the first thing that you concentrate on, and you spend your focus there. And then what happens is that when you do go to work, because you've made sure you've created the space for family and your recreation and so on, when you do go to work, your performance goes up from 7 to 9, if you like, or from 6 to 8 or beyond. The impact on performance is fantastic. But
it
the
is.
Challenge is that most people don't believe that in our cultures, because we've been so programmed into believing you've got to work hard.
Yes. Not only on performance, the impact on your mental thoughts.
Yep.
Your thoughts can be more focused now because you know that you're taking action on a few areas that need improvement. So when you're at work, you don't have to be thinking about those other areas because you have a plan in place and you're putting some actions in place. And so it allows you to really focus on your work. And I read a book, I think it was called Full Engagement, where it talks about when you work, you can work for like a maniac for brief periods of time, focus all your effort, and then get away for equal amounts of good amount of pleasure time as well. So work like a dog and then take your mind off, go somewhere. Even during the day, it recommends, take 15 to 30 minutes throughout a day when you're intensely focused and just go out and do some of those right brain thinking things. And what a great concept. When you have your wheels in life, when you're in a particular situation, you can be in that situation because you know that your other wheels are being taken care of at another time with a specific plan.
Yeah.
And that can really...
Sure, that family time or recreation time is as important as the next meeting.
Exactly. And yet when you do corporate training, do you have the people who hire you like wondering like, oh God, Jack's getting into personal stuff here. This is not business. Like, oh.
Yeah, well, of course, they inevitably, everything, when I'm working with corporates, all the tools and techniques are supplied, but obviously with the context of the client's brief. And because yeah. the way that we teach the program, it's done in the privacy of the individual's mind. So whether it's 800 in the audience or 1,000 or it's 20 or 6 even around the boardroom table, it's not necessarily the case that everybody knows what's going on inside everyone's mind. They're applying the tools and techniques. They're learning to use them around the wheel of life. Obviously, the focus would be on the corporate brief.
Yes.
And but ultimately, you know, I'll always make the point, if you don't work on the balance, you won't improve your scoring in your work performance.
Exactly. And yet I think the top leaders, really top leaders, they're beginning really to recognize that if I can look after various wheels of life for my people, not just one wheel of life, that I'm going to have a really great employee who is emotionally intelligent and really putting a great effort in. And so those are true leaders who aren't just focused on your worth to them as a business entity, but as a person. Wow. What's coming up for you in the next few months, Jack? Are you going to be anywhere or any new books?
Yeah, well, what I'm doing is, there's a few things I'm doing. First of all, we intend to launch a new website this coming weekend.
Yes.
So come Monday, we're going to launch the new website, which is an interim process towards something we want to expand into more online learning. So your listeners who obviously... you know, getting to hear me at a course in London, and when I come to the States or Canada, I'm always coming to work with a corporation, so I don't do open courses there.
Right.
I have to fly across the Atlantic if I'm in North America to do a course somewhere. When I do open programs, I only do them in the UK. So what I want to do is make the training available as online learning packages. And
wow.
So the new website is just an interim to get people like who have never really engaged with us before to understand what we're about, and then gradually introduce the online learning. So my initial approach is hopefully by the start of the year have a program for school students, given their earlier conversation,
yeah.
So that they in the Northern Hemisphere they would have the run up towards if the program begins in January. Then they would have the run-up to start integrating these tools and techniques into their classroom studies, their own research, whatever, so that by the time the national exams come, that they can use the full techniques and fly. That's the big thing I want to do. Also, for the general population around the world who want to get interested in this stuff, to start going through the process of learning how to find a way onto the right bank of the river, as we call it, to build the house, start building it, you know, room by room. And
yeah.
We've got, if we do a monthly kind of subscription, we've got about 6 years of material. So we'll keep them busy, and we've got weekly
wow.
programs and so on and so forth. So this is all coming. And also what I'm going to do is I plan to go and spend some time in the Mediterranean and write another book. So
nice.
I'm going to get the book written by hopefully the end of the year. Again, so that's a big project that I see myself doing. I might, you know, I just got to make sure I can squeeze it in through the schedule. But yeah, certainly that's a plan. I created a program, a course called The Island, which I taught for a few years back, and it was a truly amazing process of self-discovery for people who came on the program. And I need to write the book about that, and that's a huge journey for people. And yet another website. So that's where we're at.
Wow.
And obviously still available for the corporates. And
I've got a
program in London I'm doing in October. Once your listeners, you know, listen to this, if they come on the website, after probably about Monday, then they should be able to begin to see what we're attempting to do.
Wow. And I love online classes and courses. This is the way to go. I think it even encourages more whole brain thinking to do an online class, because you could be sitting in your most comfortable, I'm thinking of my home office, and you can be thinking more about the whole brain thinking about the course rather than if you're in a live conference, you don't necessarily have the time or opportunity to do that. So I love that idea, and you have a ton of content. So as you said, if you can do a monthly subscription that's at a low enough cost that people are developing themselves as a better person every month through a little bit of investment, What a taking the courses when they have the time. That's a tremendous idea. I hope you're going to have an affiliate program because I'm going to be promoting the heck out of those.
Okay, well, talk to me about that.
Plus, you have all those Jack Black fans. You've been around not just a few years now, so you have a ton of history of Jack Black clients who probably wouldn't mind promoting it through their website and online presence as well, because when you find a course that changes your life, you do want to tell about 1,000 people.
Yeah. So
I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, it'll be nice to get. So, again, at the turn of the year, probably, we would be launching the online learning. But in the meantime, there's lots of stuff on your website for people, you know.
Oh, I know. I'm on it regularly, and there is so much interesting stuff. And, of course, people should subscribe to your newsletter blog as well. I get that occasionally, and I kind of admire you on that one, is that you're not sending me one every 2-3 days like some people do. You really do time it out nicely so that my inbox isn't all Jack Black. So, you know, people subscribe to that. You're not going to bombard them, and every time I get one, it's valuable advice and information. So I appreciate that.
I took me a long time to accept it, but I now do the tweeting, and the people who follow me on Twitter or Jack_Mindstore or get a hold of us on Facebook or even want to link with me at LinkedIn. What I do is I every morning I tweet about Mindstore techniques, and even if people haven't done our techniques, I also do some general ones. So every day people get encouragement. So that's one of the ways I keep in touch with people. And anybody who's listening who wants to sort of join us there, they're more than welcome.
Exactly. I just recently, even though I spoke to you some while ago, just added you on LinkedIn, and I felt kind of cool having the Tony Robbins of the UK. I think something that kind of also opened my eyes a little bit when I was introduced to you is that, you know, when you live in Canada or North America, you think every motivational speaker or trainer is from Canada or North America. But guess what? The UK has some pretty hot people, too. And so it's like, wow, very neat being a global business person, because then you can find out about equally good training on other sides of the world. And so very fascinating. Thanks so much for your time today, Jack. It's always exciting for me to talk to you. I think I get more out of the conversation than probably listeners do. I really enjoy it, and I'm going to go back and change a few things in my goals and thinking myself, and I encourage people to find that, get that audio where you can teach them about going into their into those rooms and into their right brain. Really tremendous. I use it regularly, and boy, I feel like a superhero when I'm done. Thanks so much, Jack. I really appreciate your time today.
Fantastic, Tom. Thank you, and all the very best to you in the future.
Take care.
Bye.